Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Today, we are going to talk about Lyme's disease. I think a lot of people know about Lyme's disease. A lot of people have heard about Lyme's disease. But I'm not sure everybody understands completely what is involved with Lyme's disease. Several years ago at the Institute, I had a young man that was a guest at the Institute, and he was struggling with advanced Lyme's disease. And through him, I learned many, many things that I was totally unaware of before. Even though I'd met many guests that had been diagnosed with Lyme's disease, I didn't understand the magnitude of this illness. Lyme's disease can lead to lots of issues, lots of problems, some of them physical, some of them mental. Not sure why, don't completely understand it, so I asked for the help of Shelley and Monica in regard to this, because I do think that there's a lot of conversation out there about Lyme's disease, so I thought it would be a good idea if we really understood a little bit more about it. So before I invite the ladies in, I want to mention that there is a lot of stuff going on here in South Florida right now, a lot of different arenas of things going on in schools. There was a little boy who was arrested, 7 years old, for one of many times losing his temper and punching a teacher. I'm not sure how that happened, why that happened, but I found that to be very, very upsetting. And I'm not sure what the complete deal was. I just lost my whole switchboard. There we go. Everybody's back now. Okay. So there's also a teacher who has been arrested and put in jail for soliciting teenage girls. A lot of stuff is still going on out there. So it's important that we talk about everything. So I want to open the doors to anybody who is familiar with some of the things that are going on our news right here in South Florida today. If you have any questions about anything, we can look into some of these things and we can discuss them. If anybody has any information that they'd like to share with us, I'd enjoy hearing from you as well. But for today, we're going to talk about Lyme's disease. So I'm going to bring in the ladies, and let's hear what they have to say about Lyme's disease and some of the different more holistic approaches to recovering or at least controlling Lyme's disease. Good morning, Shelley. Good morning, Monica.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How's everybody?
Doing good. A little chillier than we're used to, but it can be kind of refreshing at the same time.
Monica's probably ready to hit you with a hammer. What is it there,
yeah,
Monica?
Yeah.
It was snowing last night. Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay.
I really can't
remember the last winter that it was so bad in the northern state. Well, even you're not even really what I consider northern states. You're in North Carolina, Monica, and you still had. Sherry posted something. Sherry's an avid gardener, flowers and stuff like that. She is Monica's husband's sister. She's Monica's sister-in-law, my cousin. And she posted on Facebook yesterday, oh, no, it's snowing again. So it is chilly for us this morning, Monica. And, of course, Monica has lived in Florida. But it's cool for us for this time of year. So let's talk about Lyme's disease. And first of all, the consensus is that Lyme's disease is often brought on by a tick bite. Is that true, you guys?
It's true, but it's not the only delivery method, for lack of a better way of putting it. I actually did not get it from a tick bite when I had it in New York. There was an epidemic out on Long Island from mosquitoes. Mosquitoes evidently were biting infected deer, I guess it was, and then biting humans. And they had there was a doctor that I had gone to, a clinical ecologist, who was actually going to symposiums out in Arizona, where they found that that mosquitoes can also transmit the Lyme's disease from infected host to another host. So, but the deer tick, the brown deer tick, I think it is the most common delivery method for Lyme's disease, but it's not the only. It's just more commonly transmitted that way.
Well, that's what I've always been told too, but I have also read before that it's not always the only source of infection. So, who would like to take the floor first and talk about either the effects of Lyme disease, as I mentioned before I opened up the phones to both of you. I had that guest at the Institute who had tremendous side effects, behavioral side effects. And I guess that when it progresses, Lyme's disease, when it progresses, it does attack that side of your body,
Well, I can start out by explaining to everybody what I went through, you know, quickly. I had been misdiagnosed for many months because by the time I contracted Lyme's disease, I had already been sick for decades. So, unfortunately, the Lyme's disease symptoms mimic other illnesses. So, if you're already having other illnesses, sometimes it can go undiagnosed or misdiagnosed because what I knew that something different was happening in my body. I was in more pain, I was in greater fatigue, and I was starting to suffer severe brain fog. It was just very difficult for me to think and comprehend things. And what had happened is by that time I already had, you know, I already had chronic fatigue syndrome, which is very similar. I had chronic fatigue syndrome. I already had fibromyalgia, so I had chronic pain from that. I had also had leaky gut syndrome and irritable bowel syndrome and chronic. I had polycystic ovarian disease. So I had a lot of other issues I was dealing with. And then all of a sudden, I started feeling intently worse. So I knew something changed. This wasn't the things that I had been dealing with for the last few years. Something became intensely deeper. I was in more pain. I was starting to get lumps in my glands, like under my arms, in my armpits, behind my knees. I was starting to notice these very painful lumps. The fatigue was overwhelming. Where I had chronic fatigue already, so I would get these bouts of just absolute exhaustion. With the Lyme's disease, I actually passed out at work. And that's when I realized there was something more integrally going on here, that this whatever was happening to me, either something I already had got worse or I had something on top of it. So I went to the doctor, and they tested me for a whole litany of things, and that's when they discovered that on top of the other issues I already had, that I had contracted Lyme's disease. I at that point I had not been exposed to ticks, although these ticks are very tiny, so it's kind of hard to tell. But what I had been doing is I had been working as a volunteer at the beach, and when I told the doctor that, they had been finding out that a lot of people had been contracting Lyme's disease at the beachfront because of all the mosquitoes. And So that's when they started finding out that there was almost like an epidemic level of people down at the beach that were contracting Lyme's disease, and they started doing a study there and found out. So there is the great likelihood that that is how I contracted it. And it also, over time, because it took them 8 months to diagnose me, and during that 8 months I got worse and worse and worse, it affected my joints. Lyme's disease attacks your joints. I lost use of my left arm for 2.5 years. It weakened my left knee so that about a year later I ended up blowing that knee out. I did what's called a Baker cyst. I ruptured the bursa sac that sits behind the kneecap, so I wasn't able to use my left leg for like 5 years. And I ended up terrible joint issues, brain fog. And one of the things that people don't understand is that Lyme's disease is both a bacteria and a parasite. If you get bit by a tick or a mosquito, they shed living organisms into your bloodstream, and you have both a parasitical and a bacterial infection. So if you only fight it with antibiotics, which is what they did with me, you're not really ridding the entire disease, because you have got to do an anti-parasite program in order to effectively clear Lyme's disease. I no longer have Lyme's disease. I'm sure I would still test positive for it because I still have the antibodies in my body. But for over a decade, I tested positive for Lyme's disease until I went on this healing regimen that I did that basically healed me of everything else.
So your side effects, though, I mean, you mentioned brain fog. But one of the things that I witnessed to a great degree were actually, I mean, there was poor health for sure, but it was the mental effects that took me so by surprise. The man that came to the institute with Lyme disease, it was so advanced that this only happened a couple times in the 10 years that I was there. I had to have him arrested. Only because I didn't know what else to do. There was no family member. There was nobody I could call. When I tried to call some mental health advocates, I was told that he'd have to be in the system before they could help him. So we're talking about...
Well, the issue is that it becomes so... if it gets so invasive in the body and it gets into the brain, anytime you have any parasitical activity, if it can get past that blood-brain barrier, you're really going to have a rough time. And Lyme's disease is one of the illnesses that can affect the function of the brain. So it can be quite traumatic. Because there were days that I felt that my brain didn't work right. Now, it didn't affect my behavior and that it didn't make me act criminally or crazy or anything like that. But what it did is it made it very difficult for me to be able to understand things. I would sit at my desk and I would push papers back and forth until I felt a little bit better. And then all of a sudden, something I had looked at 10 minutes earlier that made no sense to me, all of a sudden I figured out how to do it and I got it done. So I still did a lot of work, but it was a struggle for me during that period of time because it's almost like I couldn't access normal cognition with with how much pain I was in and the severe fatigue, which was almost immobilizing at points. But it absolutely affected my brain function.
Monica, have you had any dealings with Lyme's disease?
Not at all. I know somebody that has it, and she has also told me about, the brain fog that she feels, but she also has other issues, MTHR, MTF, whatever it is, but... Now, only what I've read in, here and there in different articles, but the one thing that caught my attention about Lyme disease is not so much the bacteria part, but the parasitic part. It builds a barrier around itself, and that's why it's so hard for any herbs you might be taking to break through that fibrin barrier, and it gets into the cell. So, and like Shelley said, it has to be able to break whatever you take, and antibiotics won't do it. Whatever you take has to be able to break that blood-brain barrier and the fibrin around the parasite. So it's a killer disease. I mean, not so much killer, but you probably feel like you're dying while you have it. It's just amazing how horrible it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I, well, through the years at the Institute, I met several people who had been diagnosed with Lyme's. But like I said, the one man, I mean, it was very advanced, and he had written, I always thought his intellect was originally higher or more advanced than a lot of other people I've met, including myself. So he wrote a paper. It was almost like a small book that was all handwritten, and some of it you could see where he was struggling. I read the whole thing, but you could see where he was struggling with, you know, unsound thoughts and erratic behavior. You could tell by the writing on some pages. So I found it very, very interesting. I'm not the sharpest pencil in the box, but some things always get my attention because I question how something like that could happen. Now, other guests that have been there with a diagnosis of Lyme's disease, much like Shelley, a little brain fog, but lots of joint pain, very similar and often mistakenly diagnosed as fibromyalgia, according to some of my sources. And because a lot of times in the beginning it starts out the same way, lethargy, brain fog, but the joint pain and all that kind of stuff. So I would like to do, I don't want to touch on it too much today because I would like to be able to do a show totally designed to talk about parasites, because I think that parasites are a big part of a lot of people's illnesses, and unless they are aware of the fact that that could be happening to them, they don't even look for that, and neither do doctors, very sadly. I, having been very close to a lot of the colon therapists at the Institute, I know for a fact that when you are cleansing your body and when you're doing the things that you do at a place that's all about cleaning up your insides, which includes colon therapy and raw food and wheatgrass and all the things that go with that, very often people release things that look like giant worms, things that look like totally like alien creatures. I mean, you know, after I talked with some of the colon therapists and I witnessed some of the things that they could show to me that they took pictures of, I was like, God, this is like the alien movie where that funky looking worm comes out of that guy's belly. I mean, it can be very gross.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And
yeah, I had,
it's,
you know, it's interesting. I found a website in here, and I was very pleased that it was down here in South Florida. I don't even know how to pronounce this. It looks like it's Spinagel Wellness Institute. It's in Palm City, Florida. And it looks like they specialize in brain disorders. They have wellness programs for ADHD, Alzheimer's, anxiety, brain trauma, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and they also include Lyme's disease in their repertoire, Lyme brain research and chronic Lyme disease. And then they have testimonials. It's a very interesting website. They actually show this one man who was in a Lyme brain coma for 7 months. He had lost the ability to speak, and through their treatments, he is now he is now out of the hospital and speaking again for the first time since he had that crisis, that Lyme crisis. But they have all these before and after stories of people with all different types of brain problems. But they are saying that, let me go back to the beginning here, where they actually talk about Lyme disease, because they are talking about the fact that there is a, because I want to read what he wrote, there is a reason why Lyme disease is also a brain disease. Let me see if I can get back to that. Lyme treatment. At Spinalgo Wellness Institute, we have successfully treated chronic Lyme patients from over 25 countries. Our clinical research has proven that all chronic Lyme patients suffer from undiagnosed environmental toxicity that severely suppresses their immune function. Because of their compromised immune function, chronic Lyme patients always harbor other undiagnosed tick-borne and mosquito-borne infections. So this particular institute did make the connection between mosquitoes and Lyme as well, some of which are more debilitating than the Lyme disease itself. So basically what they're saying here is that it starts out as the tick bite or the mosquito bite. It releases a parasite in the body and then creates the Lyme bacteria, which is almost like an aftermath of the original parasitical infection, which I've never heard before. Why is Lyme disease always a brain disease? Because recent research has proven that it only takes 12 hours for the Lyme spirochete, which is a parasite, to enter the brain after a tick or mosquito bite. Our brain expertise greatly enhances our ability to correct Lyme-induced brain dysfunction that causes immune dysfunction. Furthermore, we can better treat Lyme-induced depression, anxiety, and brain fog. And then they go on with, it's a very well laid out website, and they go into detail. They explain to you what each thing is, and then they have all kinds of testimonials, and they even have videos on some of the people that were completely dysfunctional before and after they went through the treatment at this center. So.
Well, I think some of the things I read, too, you've kind of touched on, there's a lot of heart damage, too, if it goes untreated. But I want to make a mention of something that may help everybody if you are concerned about anything along these lines. If you get bit by a tick and it's inflamed and you could be a victim of Lyme disease, the area where you get bit starts to look actually like a bullseye. There's a red inflammation in the center, and there's usually a red circle around the center bullseye, so to speak. That's just what it looks like, is a bullseye. If you get bit by something like that, like on your ankles or on your legs, if you're out in the woods or if you're doing something like that, you need to check out what's going on. And you will often have flu-like symptoms once you get bit like that. And it will get into your joints. Like Shelley said, you have aches and pains. And it gets into your heart muscle and it gets into your nervous system. And according to the articles that I read, it's an early localized disease with skin inflammation. And then the second stage is an early disseminated disease with heart and nervous system involvement, including palsies and meningitis. And number three is late disease, featuring motor and sensory nerve damage and brain inflammation, as well as arthritis. So this is really serious. This is something to pay close attention to. And for those of you who live in a vicinity where there are the big brown deer ticks, one of the articles I read, and I
actually,
don't,
the deer ticks are very small, Rainey. That's the confusing. That's why it's so hard to detect. The deer ticks are those little tiny brown that they're you almost can't even see them, and that's why a lot of times people get bit. They don't even know they got bit because the deer ticks are so small. So it's not the big ticks that you see like on dogs. These are little tiny ticks, and those
right.
are the ones that carry the Lyme disease.
Right. But the point, that's the point I'm making, is that if you see those big brown ticks, like what's on a dog, it's not the same. But what they call them in the one article that I read, and I can't find it anymore, I do that all the time, they have little short black legs, and it seems to be, let me see if this is one of the things, they give a real description of it, and it is different than the big fat ones that suck blood out of your animals and stuff like that. Certain ticks found on deer harbor the bacterium in their stomachs. Lyme disease is spread by these ticks when they bite the skin, which permits the bacterium to infect the body. Lyme disease isn't contagious. From an affected person to someone else, Lyme disease can cause abnormalities in the skin, joints, heart, and nervous system. Well, let me see this. This disease didn't become apparent until 1975 when mothers of a group of children who lived near each other in Lyme, Connecticut, made researchers aware that their children had all been diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. This unusual grouping of illness that appeared rheumatoid eventually led researchers to identify the bacterial cause of the children's condition, and that's why it was called Lyme's disease by 1982.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of cases of the disease in an area depends on the number of ticks present and how often the ticks are infected with the bacteria. In certain areas of New York where Lyme disease is common, over half the ticks are infected with Lyme disease. And it's been reported most often in the northeastern United States, but it has been reported in all 50 states as well as China, Europe, Japan, Australia.
Yeah.
There is a picture, and it looks just like the ticks look before they get to be the fat brown ones when they suck the blood. They have the long legs, and they have like a almost like an oval-shaped body. And they look like the kind of a tick that has been laid in a dog's skin before they start to attach and suck their blood. So I think it's important for everybody to understand that there may not be a way to always avoid something like that, but I think that you need to be aware of the fact that if you have been bitten by something and it looks like a bullseye, and the picture that they show on this website is exactly like a bullseye, then you need to pay attention to it.
Well, one of the things you can do is there are all kinds of natural repellents. I don't recommend any of the ones sold in the regular supermarkets because they have severe toxins in them. But if you go to Whole Foods, there's all kinds of natural insect repellents that are effective on mosquitoes and ticks. And if you know that you're going to an area that has that type of insect activity, spray your clothes. If you're going to be wearing shorts and a tank top, spray your, you know, make sure it's something you can put right on your skin, and that will at least reduce your risk and exposure. So there are things that you can do proactively, and especially if you're the type of person that is either in that type of an area often, let's say you work at a hotel and you're down on the beach or something like that a lot. A lot of these beachfront resorts we have here in Florida, be smart. They make some of these, like at Whole Foods, I know they have one that uses, I forgot the flower they use. I'm going to say marigold, but it's not marigold. Anyway, they use a flower, so it doesn't have that citronella smell to it. It actually has a very nice fragrance to it, but it's very effective for repelling insects, so they don't land on you and bite to begin with. And it wouldn't be an unpleasant odor that would offend guests that you might be around. This website I'm looking at, though, the same one I was talking about a minute ago, they also say under the tab for Lyme's, they say that cardiovascular system is also affected. Tick-borne infections, particularly Lyme and Bartonella. By the way, Bartonella is far less known than Lyme's. But a lot of people who are diagnosed with Lyme disease actually have Bartonella infection because they are so closely related to each other. But tick-borne infections include both Lyme disease and Bartonella disease, and they are notorious for causing cardiac arrhythmias, incomplete heart block and partial conduction delays in heart electrical system. Even young patients can develop what's called a right bundle branch block, which causes heart rate variability and often referred to as a sick sinus syndrome. When appropriate, this particular wellness center then will do either an echocardiogram or an ultrasound on the heart to see how severely it's being impacted by the parasitical infection. And, you know, interestingly, which I was never told back then, because when I had Lyme's disease, we're talking about 20 years ago, that's when I developed bradycardia, tachycardia. I had always had tachycardia my entire life. It's one type of arrhythmia, and I developed bradycardia arrhythmia at the time I had Lyme's disease, and now that I'm reading this, that's why. It causes different types of arrhythmias. So I actually developed a second arrhythmia during the time I had Lyme's disease, and I never knew why, and now I'm reading this here. But the doctors at that time didn't even know that's why I developed the other arrhythmia. They never made the connection, and now I'm reading it.
Everything that I read talks a lot about the effect it has on the heart. I do want to mention, thanks to Monica, I've been doing a lot of research on coconut oil. And ironically, somebody posted a uses of coconut oil on Facebook a couple days ago, and I wanted to my computer crashed yesterday morning. I had to go out yesterday and get a new computer because I couldn't even get into it anymore. It kept freezing up and all this stuff was going on. So anyway, I didn't get to finish doing that, but I was going to send it to Monica. And the reason I'm bringing it up now is they talk about the use of coconut oil on animals to stop flea and tick infestation. What about, Monica, how do you feel about having coconut oil? If you use it, like I'm using it here recently on my face, on my neck, I have skin inflammations on my chest from prolonged sun from when I was a kid, and now it's kind of blossoming on my chest. And I've been using it, and I've been experimenting with it for the boys' inflammations on their adolescent acne and things like that. But when I read this, Kelly and I are doing swaps, massages for counseling, and she used the coconut oil for my massage last week. Do you think it's possible that if somebody uses coconut oil every morning as like a skin softener, that they can actually keep ticks and fleas and things like that, even maybe mosquitoes at bay? Does anybody have any thoughts on that? Have you done anything like that, Monica?
Well, I always use coconut oil. That's my moisturizer of choice for the whole body and face and everything. I don't know that would keep ticks off of you because, or even mosquitoes or anything like that. Ingesting the coconut oil every day could help because it's antifungal, antibacterial, that sort of thing. You would need to get some essential oils to keep the ticks off of you and mosquitoes, like lemon oil. What else have I done? Lemon oil. Oh, gee, I can't think of. I make a tick and mosquito repellent for my dogs that I spray on them. Also, fleas. It helps with that, too. And
well, a lot of
lemon skin, oil. Pardon me?
A lot of people use Skin So Soft from Avon for that and swear by it. So I was pretty sure some kind of an oil mixture would help.
Right.
But
well, yeah, you can take the essential oils and put them, mix that in your coconut oil, and then slather it on, you know, whenever you go outside. And the essential oils would be definitely lemon oil. Mosquitoes do not like, or fleas, do not like lemon oil. Peppermint, they don't like peppermint either. So that would be another essential oil that you can include in the coconut oil. Lavender, anything that's highly fragranced like that. Also, it's like a pine. I have it in my medicine cabinet. I'm not near it right now. But if you Google essential oils for ticks, mosquitoes, fleas, down there in Florida you have a lot of sand fleas. They really bothered me when I was down there. And, of course, I didn't know about this then. But putting that around the bottom part of your legs because, you know, everybody wears shorts down there.
Not everybody. Okay.
Oh, yeah, I never did. Yeah, well, most people.
A lot of people do, yeah.
Yeah, I never did either. So because of the sand fleas and everything was always biting me. So, yeah.
Well, I think that ingesting some of those things, that makes sense to me because, you know, if you take some, you know, your body sweats and you know, it comes out on your skin, that just, I don't know, that kind of rings true to me to be able to do something along those lines. And the other thing,
well,
of course,
you wouldn't want to ingest any of the essential oils unless it's extremely high quality. The essential oils are mostly just for topical application, but you can certainly ingest the coconut oil, and that does a lot of things for your body besides increasing your good fat content to protect yourself from Alzheimer's for, you know, later on in life, or it's cognition and all that. That's what coconut oil is so good for. But the essential oils, don't ingest those. Don't, you know, that could be dangerous.
Well, see, I don't like the Skin So Soft product simply because it is not a pure essential oil. I did try to use it on my dog a little bit, but because of the perfumes and everything in it, it actually aggravated the skin condition he had. The oil was smoothing his skin out and cleaning him a little bit, but then the perfumes were irritating his skin. So it was like helping one issue and then creating another one. So Skin So Soft isn't a great product if you have an animal that has any kind of sensitivities because it's fragranced. It's not a pure essential oil. So it's not good to use on even a human being if you have any kind of sensitive skin issue. Jason is one of these companies that sells all natural products, and they actually put out something that's safe to be used on children, and it's called Quit Bugging Me. It's a spray, and it's made from geranium oil. That I was trying to think of the flower. It's made from geranium oil, which is a natural insect repellent. As a matter of fact, if you grow geraniums around in certain areas of your yard, it can actually repel mosquitoes and things like that. And it's one of these zero landscaping concepts where you use plants to control pests in your yard instead of using pesticides. And if you read the ingredients on here, there's no citronella, there's no fragrance. It's just a natural, I think there's soybean oil as the as what it's put into. But it has very few ingredients. It even has a little bit of coconut oil in it as well. And it's as the carrier. So it's using soybean and coconut oil with the geranium oil, and it's called Quit Bugging Me by Jason. It's sold at Whole Foods and other health food shops. So that's something that people can try, and it's actually made for children, but it would work for anybody.
Well, again, I think protective maintenance is probably the name of the game, because if everything I've read, Lyme's disease, you can control it but I don't see anything that tells me it can be eradicated. So,
well, it can be eradicated, and I'm living proof that it can be eradicated. I had it so severely that I was crippled for years, and they kept running the tests on me, and I kept coming up positive, positive, positive. I was on 8 months of antibiotics, but see, back then they didn't make the parasite connection, so I was only on antibiotics. And after 8 months on antibiotics, I wasn't much better. The brain fog was getting worse. I had no use of my left arm for 2.5 years, so they were not correcting the joint damage either. And it was at that time is when I stopped using medical approaches. I actually stopped taking the antibiotics, and I started reading other ways of healing my body. One of the things they talk about in this institute that I found that website for this morning is that it's essential to do gut cleansing, which is something we've talked about on this show before, that in order to eradicate Lyme's disease, you have got to do a very effective gut cleansing, but both parasitical, but it has to be parasitical in nature, because that's one of the problems with the pathogenic yeast and bacteria that's developed from overuse of antibiotics. Most doctors that are not really educated in Lyme's disease always do antibiotic treatment, which was mine. I was on an antibiotic for 8 months. And and that's why the Lyme's disease wasn't clearing for me, because the antibiotic allowed this pathogenic yeast to build up in my system and actually made me worse. So that's one of the things they talk about, is that chronic Lyme's patients suffer from antibiotic-induced intestinal overgrowth of pathogenic yeast and bacteria. So they go into the toxins from this pathogenic intestinal yeast and bacteria further shut down the immune system. We therefore also direct a thorough gut cleansing protocol and correct these antibiotic-induced changes in brain chemistry. So they're making a link between antibiotic-induced changes in the gut, allowing this pathogenic yeast, and also affecting the brain chemistry. So they've really made the link here between those two different areas. And it was after I started going through gut cleansing to take care of everything. I mean, I wasn't only trying to heal Lyme disease. I was trying to just heal my body overall. But the interesting thing, which is something that we used to see happen to people at Hippocrates all the time, is all my different disorders started healing simultaneously. It's not like I healed the Lyme's disease, and then I went after the chronic fatigue, and then I went after the irritable bowel syndrome. It's like my body healed all at the same time. Everything, all my symptoms started lessening and lessening. I started being in less pain. I started getting more energy. I was able to start thinking clearer. But the thing that really turned the tide for me was when I started doing intestinal cleansing. And I went on about 5 different protocols over a 2-year period. And each time I did an intestinal cleansing, I got better. And then a few months later, I would do another one, and I would get better. And I tried several different products. But the intestinal cleansing probably did more for me than just about anything else. And in order to do an intestinal cleanse, you do have to clean up your diet. Any of the intestinal cleanses that are out there, they give you a dietary protocol while you're going through the cleansing, so that while you're detoxifying, you're not retoxifying. You have to eat a certain healthy diet in order to do intestinal cleansing. And they talk about that a lot on this particular website as well.
Well, like I said, even with that said, I too have gone over a lot of them, and I've read a lot of people's comments, and I've read all kinds of input from people that have been suffering with Lyme's disease for years and years and years, and there seems to be constant repercussions. And I, of course, agree with gut cleansing. I, of course, agree with all the things that we learned about at the Institute, because I saw the results. But the point I'm making is that once you have been infected with Lyme's disease, it is a lifelong journey to keep yourself in check because of the parasitic involvement, I would guess. That's a guess, not a knowledge. But it seems to me that everything I read, some people even have eye problems, severe eye problems, and they get put on the antibiotics, and then that kills one thing and grows another. My great-grandchild, who's in the hospital now, one of the side effects for him, I mean, we are working all the time with what he can have to help clear up the yeast infection that he's got in his diaper because of all the antibiotics. And my granddaughter saying, "Graham, look at his butt again today." And I said, "Well, you just have to, I'd let some air get to it." She's using some good stuff on it. But as long as he's getting those heavy doses of antibiotics, it's really not going to go away, and it will be with him probably for years to come. My point is that you must always keep it in check. It doesn't seem to get cured in the sense of the word cured. It's a chronic.
Well, it becomes non-symptomatic. And I was that's why I was saying, if I have a blood test right now, it's still going to show that I have Lyme disease, because I've been tested recently and it still shows positive. But what happens with my numbers is I either test positive exposed or positive active. The numbers, the level of the whatever number is that shows them I had Lyme disease, it flips. And at one point, now it's showing it's active in your body. So I always test positive exposed because I had it for years. All right, I had it actively for years, is what I'm saying. But what I consider a cure is that I'm non-symptomatic. Now, every now and then, if I get a touch of a flu or something like that, it flips my Lyme disease back on, or my Epstein-Barr, because I test positive for both. I also had Epstein-Barr virus, which became chronic. So I have chronic Epstein-Barr in my system. I have another chronic viral complex. I always test positive for these things. I still test positive for Lyme's disease. So I test positive for a lot of stuff. But because of the lifestyle changes I made, because of the gut cleansing, which I've probably done a dozen times now in the last 15 years, okay, I keep these at bay. So I'm non-symptomatic. I will get momentary flare-ups. If I get the flu, it kind of toggles these other issues on. So when I get a flu, I'm really out of it for a day or two. But even with that, even with all these challenges and these chronic illnesses in my system, if I heal faster from the flu than anybody I know that gets shots or takes medication from the doctor, I'll heal from a flu in a day or two where a lot of people are out for a week or two, you know. So it's not that I don't get sick, but I heal much more quickly. I'm back to my normal routine very, very quickly. So it's not that I don't have these issues anymore. It's just that I bounce back from them. So in that regard, to me, it is curable because I'm non-symptomatic.
But that's really not considered cured, though, Shell. That's really not considered cured. Cured is when it's eradicated. So
but that's
what
never
you do
happen.
Is you have it. That's my point, honey. That's my whole point. My point is that if you take care of yourself and do the things that you're talking about and that Monica talks about, you keep it in check, just like many of the other things that go on in our bodies once we have them once. It's keeping them under control. But cure is a whole other word. Cure means it's gone, it's eradicated, and it doesn't. And everything that I've read talks about all the things that you just talked about, being able to do some of the things. And we both know that if you have an onslaught of antibiotics, you've got to do some cleansing. You have to do some cleansing. One of the worst things that I've ever seen is somebody who has had antibiotic-induced candida to the point of kind of the same side effects that we're talking about with Lyme's disease. Candida is horrible for some women. Men too, but for some reason our bodies are designed differently, so the issues are much greater if we get bombarded with candida, and it can affect everything from our bodies to our hair. Even our hair can be affected by candida. So it's the same thing with Lyme's disease.
Right. With me, it affects. I had the systemic, what's called systemic candida, This was before I contracted the Lyme disease, but for years I lived with systemic candida, and this is why they kept misdiagnosing me for the Lyme disease, because it causes such similar issues. I had the joint pain then, although I wasn't crippled, but I had chronic joint pain. I didn't have the lumps in my glands back then, but a lot of the other things I had were just like a little bit lower than the Lyme disease, because that also creates some brain fog and things like that. But I actually started bleeding from the systemic candida. I was just absolutely in so much pain for about 2 years, and I wasn't healing. One of the things that the systemic candida caused is that I couldn't heal from wounds. If I would get a little teeny scratch on my arm or something like that, it would get infected, it would swell up. I'm talking about a little scratch, okay? It would take 2 weeks for me to heal. And so they actually tested me for diabetes, which I didn't have, but one of the symptoms of the systemic candida was that I couldn't heal from minor injuries. If I got bruised, if I got a sprain or something like that, my body just couldn't seem to repair tissues. And so I lived with that for many years as a result of the systemic candida.
Well, that's the whole point is that I want to get across to the listeners today is preventative maintenance so that you don't ever get Lyme's disease, because it will be something that you fight for the rest of your life. It will be something that tears down your constitution, just like many of the other things that we've talked about, many of the other ailments or the diagnosis that is being given by doctors everywhere. My grandchild, that's one of the things I'm worried about right now. I mean, already they've checked his hearing, and so far he's passing all the hearing tests. But there's some problem with the hearing because of the meningitis and of the onslaught of antibiotics. It is imperative, I think, and we talked about this one show a couple weeks ago. We talked about detoxing. We talked about ridding your body, cleaning house as good as you can accomplish. That is a major thing for everybody. I know a lot of people who live a very, very extravagant lifestyle, and I met them at the Institute. They live in the fast lane. They eat very, very rich, expensive food. They drink very, very expensive and rich drinks. They do all of the things that wealthy people become accustomed to. And then 3-4 times a year, they come someplace and they detox. They cleanse their body. They do a gut cleaning. They do a blood cleaning. They do all of those things to get themselves into a better place. And sometimes that suits somebody's lifestyle. And I think that it's a good thing if you recognize that you need to do that when you live life in the fast lane. But the point with things like fibromyalgia, Crohn's disease, Lyme disease, Epstein-Barr that you mentioned, it's another thing that breaks down your constitution. And if you get anything, a bug of any kind, say you catch a virus from one of your nieces or nephews or one of your children or something, then a lot of these things that stay dormant when you're taking really good care of yourself flare up again. So try to protect yourself against getting bit by a tick. Try to keep yourself in a place where you know that you're not opening that door. And for some of you who live on farms, who live in, like they said, the northeastern states up where I'm from, it seems to be very, very prevalent up there. And the numbers show that it's there's a lot more reported cases in those states than there is even here in Florida. So I just want to make mention that all the things that Shelley and Monica have talked about as far as cleansing your body are going to be beneficial to overcome any of these kind of problems. But before we're out of time, I want to ask you girls how you feel about, there was some news on today, and Monica has mentioned this to me before, and Shelley and I have done shows on this before. But tomorrow, I would like to do a show on, there was a couple here in Florida that were found dead in their car, and they believe it was a mutual suicide, but they're not sure. But prior to them finding them in their car, there was a video that they showed on this morning's 5 o'clock news of the husband beating the hell out of his wife in a store. And it's all on video, on the cameras from the store. And now they find them both gone. So, again, another signal that says somebody's in trouble and nothing was done. I would love tomorrow, and I would like to invite you to join us, Monica, because you have mentioned before that you would like to have some input on spousal abuse, the history of, you know, Shelley and I talked about this in the very beginning when I first started the show. We talked about abuse of one another, husbands versus wives, et cetera. And we talked about the fact that it is very often forgiven. And way back in the day, it was, you know, men talked about their wives like they were their favorite horse. And we have come a long way from there. But when I watched that video this morning, and then I watched another one that somebody sent me on Facebook where a dad got angry at his teenage daughter because of the way she was dressed, and she'd been missing for 2 days. So he was holding her by her hair and beating her legs with a chain. And she was screaming, and people were watching, and I was sickened by this. And you can bet, you can believe that that man has either treats his wife like that, or he's seen his mother treated like that. Something along those lines has made him believe that that's okay, that that's acceptable behavior. I mean, he did it out in the open, in a street. So all kinds of people witnessed it. And then the next day, I see pictures of somebody's legs who talk about the fact that that's the way their mother punished them. And she still has scars on her legs. It made me sick to my stomach. So I'd like to talk about that tomorrow, and I'd like for you to join us, Monica. I know you usually come on just Wednesdays, but I'd like for you and anybody else out there who would like to share a story about that, and let's open up some lines of communication if somebody's going through that right now. I can't imagine being hurt by somebody on a constant basis. And of course, we know that it's everywhere. So this, though, this suicide could have been stopped if somebody had paid attention. I can't help but believe that. So are you both up for that tomorrow? We'll talk about that tomorrow, and we'll invite our listeners, and I'll put something on Facebook, too, in case anybody would like to be a part of this conversation. You don't ever have to give your name. You don't ever have to tell us who you are when you talk on the show. But I think opening lines of communication are the best way for us to heal what's going on in the world. I want to remind everybody on April 25th. Yes, honey.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to put out there for anybody who wanted to know, rose geranium oil, 25 drops mixed with 2 tablespoons of coconut oil will not allow the ticks or fleas to attach to you. And
geranium oil and what else?
2 tablespoons of coconut oil, mix that with 25 drops of rose geranium oil, and ticks will not attach to you or your dog.
Oh, excellent.
Yes.
Okay. Good
Absolutely.
Information.
They
Thank
will
you.
Not attach.
Okay.
Sorry.
I'm so glad you told us that, because here in Florida, you know, your animals, I mean, you know, and they're part of your family. That's a big thing for most of us.
Yeah.
I have a lot of friends with pets. I will put that on my Facebook page today as well. So I want to thank you both. I think that we covered a lot of territory today, and I want to invite everybody back tomorrow to talk with us about spousal abuse we'll talk about all kinds of abuse, but I think we should talk about spousal abuse because of this latest incident. So thanks, everybody. Thanks, girls. Everybody go out there and make it a great day. The sun is shining right here in South Florida right now and in my office through the window. It's beautiful. So everybody have a great day. God bless. Thanks, girls. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Ladies, talk to you tomorrow.